This evening, we're going to look first, or we look first at clarifying and drawing out. This will be very helpful for me because I've never quite understood these. I'll appreciate this discussion. Anybody prefer one over the other for this evening?
They actually seem to go in that order to me.
Which one?
Clarifying and then drawing out.
Clarifying and then drawing out. Yeah. Because?
Well, clarification seems like just a little bit of an extension of reflective listening. Mm-hmm. So the facilitator gets to sort of a bogged down, dead place, perhaps.
So what I suspect you're saying here is, or you're suggesting, is that the facilitator has used reflective listening as far as it can go.
Exactly.
So we want to underline that.
Mm-hmm.
This, now we're moving into the last resort of facilitation, correct? Okay, so
there's nothing, it's not like the advanced stage of facilitation. It has to do with the fact that
the desperation.
It's the desperation
of facilitation. Okay.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So the facilitator has been reflecting,
mm-hmm.
and gets to a point of bogged down. Was that?
That's sort of how I experience it. Or that the person is a little bit at a loss. They've put out as much information as they know to put out. They're not quite done with it.
Don't know where to go.
But they don't know where to go. So they're looking for just a little bit of help in that. And so clarifying statements can often jog the facilitator into recognizing the direction that they're not going.
Okay. And so is it introducing new topics?
No. I think of it as sort of, so these are the words that I would put it into. Is that what you're...
So this is where we get to rephrase a little,
mm-hmm.
where we get to perhaps make some connections, put a couple of points together,
mm-hmm.
to see if... Now, let me just get clear about this. Would da-da-da-da-da-da-da mean da-da-da-da-da-da?
Mm-hmm.
So I can put things together a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and I can actually start slipping in some words that this person didn't actually use.
Mm-hmm.
Very different from reflective listening.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, the key to that is, as a facilitator, not having any attachment to two things. One is that the person I'm facilitating agree with me. In other words, that I'm on the right track.
Very important.
And the other part that's linked to that is that I'm not actually trying to understand what the person is saying and draw some conclusion from it. I'm just trying to kind of put a little juice in the system so that they can then take whatever direction they need to take.
Yes. So the clarifying is really an attempt to clarify for the person you're facilitating what you as the facilitator have heard as the whole picture of where we've been.
Mm-hmm.
Because in reflective listening, you say something, I reflect it. You say something, I reflect it. You say something, I reflect it. And it's kind of a chop, 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 chop sort of process. Now we have a chance to build a little bit broader picture.
Yeah.
But we want to make sure we're all together on this broader picture that we're exploring.
Yeah.
Is that sort of it?
That sounds really good.
Okay. Penny?
Two other places where I think of clarification. One is that where it's been helpful for me is if I'm being facilitated and I've launched off on a narrative, occasionally a facilitator will sort of, after I've gone out with some lengths, just sort of repeat back a kind of quick synopsis. And I actually find that very helpful as a way of knowing that we're kind of on the same page and also hearing what it is I've said.
Yes.
Because I can get lost in my narrative myself. And sometimes the facilitator has just sort of said, let me just see if I'm kind of still with you.
So at this point, the facilitator is technically clarifying. Now, they may be trying to reflect with everything they have in them, but it's a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You've been launched for some time now, and they're going to try to pull these things in, but they may not get all your words.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a little departure, and that's okay.
Yeah. And the other place where I often find myself clarifying is along the same lines, if I'm listening to a narrative and there's maybe several characters involved and I suddenly realize I've lost track and I just don't know who the person's talking about, I might just ask for my own, just so I can stick along.
For your own clarification.
Yeah.
Yeah. And truly you are at that point. Is this what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yes?
That's one of the ways that I would use it, maybe more freely than would be wise. And I've also heard it said that it doesn't matter if you understand what they're saying. So how do I gauge whether it's really useful to clarify for myself?
Okay, so anybody want to speak to that very subtle difference there? How can I clarify what's being said from a place other than needing to understand what's being said?
I don't know the answer to that question, I don't think. But one factor for me is that, as I understand the effective listening, in part we're trying to follow. And if I'm truly lost, and I don't even know who we're talking about, and the characters seem important, then for my purposes, I guess I would ask.
Yes, and it doesn't mean you have to understand. But it is helpful to know whether we're talking about the first husband,
right,
the second husband, or the third husband.
Right.
Because if I'm going to be able to listen intelligently, reflect back, and at some point ask the questions that are going to clarify perhaps where we're going with this, or where we are, or where we've been, it might just be helpful for me to know who's who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is different from, I need to understand, why is this person talking about the second husband here?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really need to know that. I just need to know it's the second husband.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the understanding. It's not an intellectual understanding. It feels to me like we're sort of in the same neighborhood. I'm here with you, and I'm reflecting you, and I feel like I'm sort of having the same experience you are in some way.
Uh-huh.
And then when I make a movement up in my head to try to understand, for me that's a movement of getting identified. And that's not very helpful at all, because then all I can do is project from some intellectual point of view.
Exactly. So now, it, as my young friend will say, can we bring it back to me?
Right.
Like that's that movement to the head. So now I need to understand your story. It's no longer important what's going on with you. The whole thing needs to turn to me because I need to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. Disastrous.
Right. If I'm in a place where I'm just sort of there with the person and I don't have an intellectual understanding, you know, it's terrifying from a egocentric point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how I think I need to be able to relate to people. You know, in order for me to understand what's going on with you, I need to be able to go over my head and have words that, you know, explain it. But it feels like, you know, just kind of being in a place where we're just, I don't really, in an intellectual way, I don't know what's going on with you, but sort of in a heart way I kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like the responses, the reflection or the clarification can kind of come out of that place in a natural way. And I don't have to worry about so much whether I actually understand it.
Yes. So in innocence, you can say, the white one?
Yeah.
And you're just right there and trying to follow what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't have to understand why it's the white one or what that means to the person or anything else. Just, is that the one you're talking about, the white one?
And if I'm up in my head, I'm one step removed, I'm a step further back, and I'm not really relating to what's going on. I'm relating to my internal, it's basically self-consciousness that I don't, it's fear that I don't understand what's going on. It's basically
mm-hmm.
what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, this is, it doesn't matter what's happening with you. The whole thing is, how does this reflect on me?
Right.
How am I going to look in this interaction?
Right.
And when we're really facilitating, we can just kind of almost disappear.
And that's the beautiful thing about reflective listening, is that, you know, if I really do get totally lost and I don't have any idea what this person's talking about, I can still reflect.
Exactly. Uh-huh. You know. And if you use their tone of voice,
mm-hmm.
they...
It's very convincing.
It's very convincing. And sooner or later, don't you find you catch on?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like you hit your stride again, and there you are going along with them.
Well, I think it's been there all along. And then I've gotten identified or something. I've worn it off from the understanding, that other kind of understanding, and then... You know, just by reflecting back, then I can get back to where I understand that thing, and then I'm going along again.
Yeah. Which, again, is the reason that I'm so supportive of people facilitating to have exactly that experience. It's like counting in sitting. It's an immediate, it's just like that, you know, when you're gone. Because suddenly this person is talking, and you don't know what they're talking about, or... who they are, why you're here, and there's that moment of panic, and can we just keep breathing, and stay with it, stay with ourselves, and pretty soon, there you are, you're back in the groove again.
For me, it's like having water between me and you. That's what it feels like. They're just all the...
Uh-huh.
I'm just off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It almost seems to me like there's two levels of clarifying, because in a way, when we're reflecting back, we're really clarifying.
Yes.
Because if we reflect back and that's not what they said, they'll tell us.
Yes.
So,
or if we're reflecting back and that is what they said, but they've never heard it before,
right,
and they don't like it, then they'll straighten us out as well.
Right. So, I mean, there are times, I think, when I'm facilitating that I will ask little questions in the reflecting process, kind of like what Penny was talking about, if I just need to know where we are. I mean,
mm-hmm.
sometimes people, even if it's not a narrative, will make some big leap that I... you know, that they don't take you with, you know, kind of,
yes.
like they're talking about a dream and then all of a sudden they're talking about walking down the road and you don't know if that was the dream or the... But then there's the other level of clarifying, I think we started talking about with Mary, that, you know, when you kind of come to a place where, well, we're done with this part now, how can we do something that takes us...
Yes, in that way that was described, that there's a feeling that it's not finished.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten to the end of this, and yet we're not there. So the clarifying is a way to sort of start it up again, take it to a deeper level, bring in another angle. It is true. We can be reflecting and clarifying and drying out all in the same little process. Everybody knows that the reason that I hit reflective listening so hard is because it's uncomfortable for people. They don't want to do it, and therefore they don't see how effective it is, that it is the most effective tool. But it doesn't mean you need to paralyze yourself with it. So if you're reflecting along and all of a sudden you don't have enough of a sense of where you're going that it feels like you can stay on track in that way that Dave is describing, that sometimes I'm reflecting along and I know I don't know what's going on and I can be distracted by it and then I'm really lost. Then I don't even have enough to bring to it to reflect. So I can stop then. It's not a defeat to say, God, I think I lost you there. You said da 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 da, and then now we're back in the groove. Now I'm reflecting again. And again, we hit that reflective listening so hard because people want to leap ahead to clarifying and drawing out because it's much more comfortable for facilitators, especially in the beginning. Okay. Is there more about clarifying? Or have we just segued into drawing out?
There's one thing that I do that is very naughty, which is that when a person makes a statement, they're coming from a particular framework. And I can shift those words and that scenery into a different framework and feed back that different framework.
Would anyone speak to why that is not a good idea?
One of the most important things about the facilitation process for me has been that the facilitators are constantly turning the experience back to me and have this faith that I'm adequate to my own experience. It's not only powerful just to feel that during a facilitation process, but it actually empowers me to see things that I couldn't see if someone was handing me their version or their projections.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else about that? I think it's the fastest trip in the world up into the head, up into conditioning. And the other part of it to me is that the distressing part is that that's what happened to us in conditioning. We've grown up with, we've lived with, life consists of somebody else giving us their version of reality that we are supposed to then accept as our own. And I think it can really drive nice people into really hostile places in a hurry. You know, you kind of want to keep a shield with you when you do that sort of thing in facilitating, because boy, people come at you if that is not an acceptable reality for them.
I think it will cause people to get identified too.
Yes.
I know if somebody asks a question, I'll answer it. A lot of time the energy, you know, the person will just this get kind of glassed over, and then they'll, it feels like they're diving, you know, and it feels like the energy is getting sucked out of the room. And almost, you know, kind of in the sense that that's what's been done to them before.
Yes.
You know,
and that they've learned to ask questions, but they don't really, they really want to be asked questions.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're going along in a, we're having a kind of a trusting relationship, but while I'm being there with their experience, and then I take a step into a different place,
mm-hmm.
and it, I think it feels really different to that person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Unsafe.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I was remembering how in reflecting a statement, I lived in Chicago, just turning that period into a question mark. You lived in Chicago. It's just like an invitation to go on, and yet you're not changing it.
Yes. And, of course, I didn't even live in Chicago, and I want to tell you about it. Yeah, because it is inviting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I did. That was some of the, those were some of the best years of my life.
I just wanted to say one more thing about clarifying. Somebody in me says, sort of, don't stop and clarify because you're going to kind of interrupt what's going on, or you're not supposed to do that. But then what happens is I try to remember or figure it out in my mind, put the pieces together, and then I'm gone.
Yes.
You know, it's not even trying to just understand it in the sense of analyze it, but just remember.
Yes.
And so it's actually much less interruptive to just clarify.
Yes. So there you are. Somebody has given you a telephone number, and you're trying to remember it. And then you're supposed to go on with the rest of the conversation. And all that's happening for you is trying to remember that phone number. I know that people talk about being annoyed when somebody interrupts their narrative. I personally just think that that's a good opportunity for spiritual practice. Because usually we're asleep when we're telling a story. We hardly ever tell a new story in that polished fashion. You know, if it's a new story, you have to kind of take a breath once in a while. You have to look inside and see what the next piece of the story is, which is a good time for a facilitator to jump in there and reflect or do whatever it is that they're going to do. So if I can deliver 20 minutes nonstop. I need to be interrupted. I need somebody to throw a roadblock down and make me stop and listen to myself and see where I am and get started again. So even though the person gets a little annoyed, I think it's helpful.
Being facilitated, I think it's extremely helpful, because what I've noticed for myself is when I'm doing that kind of dialogue, I'm caught in egocentricity and I'm just trying to get through this interchange so that nothing needs to be revealed. And I'm not going to let you facilitate me. You know, if somebody jumps in with a reflective listening with a little question mark on the end, I know that they're really listening, so I better...
I'm already revealing something that I may not want to reveal.
Which may be simply that
I'm not listening.
So I've been looking at that, at what you were saying about clarifying with how can it not be understanding, and looking at it from the person who's facilitating. And I go back to that image about we're handing somebody something to hold for us temporarily, and then so the facilitator is then going to give it back to the person. So we don't want to add a pink ribbon to it or draw dots on it or open it up or do anything to it. It's just somebody's handed us something and we're just holding it, and then we're going to give it back to them with reflective listening. And it seems like with clarifying, the same thing can happen. It's just, oh, so is this square? I can't really quite see the shape. Is it square or?
Yes.
And what's on the back side? I haven't really seen the back yet. Or, you know, using that same image that it's, I'm not trying to do anything to this thing you've given me to hold. I'm just trying to see it. Being the person who's facilitated, it feels like the process of clarifying is just another way to say, I'm with you. I'm still here, and I'm still holding this for you.
Yes, and I'm really interested in it. You know, I'm really interested in it. And can we, again, it's a form of that same question, can we be really interested without needing to own it for ourselves or take it personally? So that I'm not just here, I'm really here. I want you to explain this to me because I want you to explain this to me, not because I'm going to get anything out of your explanation.
Well, and the thing I was looking at is internally that process, because what happens for me a lot is I don't have a clue what's going on with this person that's having whatever experience she's having. And it doesn't help to try to understand it. I mean, what she really needs is somebody to be there with her. And if I go into my, oh, I want to figure this out or understand it or whatever, it's not helpful at all.
It just takes us away from the experience. And I'm always talking to people about how to look at something. And they think what I'm describing is an analytical process. And I'm not. It's much closer to what you were just describing. So, what is on the back of it? And how big is it? And what color is it? Because that process, to me, helps me be more with it, rather than the attempt to understand it, which takes me farther away from it. Yeah.
As a facilitator, what I get from the facilitation is not the content. The content is of no use to me, but what is of value to me is the contact with the other person, is the being in presence with somebody.
Yes.
So anything that leads me into awareness of the content rather than that being in presence doesn't serve me or the other person.
Yeah, and I think that that's good for us to keep in mind in both of these ways, whether I am having that relationship with you or with myself. It's being present to that makes the difference for us. This facilitation business is just something that we do because it would be too awkward just to sit there.
That can be kind of what we're asking when we're clarifying, is how can I be more present with you in this process?
For me, that brings me back to what Marin began with, that when something feels stuck, that's what's needed, is more presence.
Yes, because we're going to take this to a new level. That's our intention anyway.
It also occurs to me that when we're talking about facilitating in the context of facilitating a group, that it's even more important to be staying with that process of reflecting and clarifying and drawing out, because the value to the other people in the group really is in modeling the process rather than in getting into the content of any one person's stuff.
Yes. So here we are. You're facilitating a group of 12, and I'm in that group, and I am talking to you about something that is deeply meaningful for me. And if you have any kind of desire to resolve my problem or move me to a better place or do something to or for me, then basically you and I are going to go into therapy. And all of these people are going to sit around and witness that, which may or may not be interesting or helpful. If you can model those processes, then you're doing something that every person in the room can do. Each person in the room can be inside playing your role as the facilitator. Okay. Are we clarified?
In reflective listening, did you talk about those long, long pauses?
You know, I can't remember if we did we? Reflecting the silence. That's right. That's right. I do recall that.
Mm-hmm. I went home and I asked my sister if I could practice with her. And we went for a little while while I was just reflecting, and then boom. So we sat there 10 minutes. And at the end she says, anyway, what's going on? And I just summarized what she had said earlier. Is summarizing the kind of reflective listening a little bit?
Perhaps that combination, that transition that we were talking about, where you're using the language that the person's using, so in that way you're reflecting, mm-hmm. but you're making connections, you're putting it all together, so in a way it might slide over into clarifying.
That was an amazing experience to see how that works. And I stuck with reflective listening. There was just that 10 minutes. There was nothing going on. And then she just blew on and on.
Kick off again.
Yeah. Very much in a direction I could have never, ever guessed. And I stuck the whole time with reflective listening.
Gosh, that's great. And that what you said is the key to this whole thing as far as I'm concerned. She went in a direction that you would have never imagined, never guessed, never tried to lead her. I mean, if you had jumped in to be in charge, that whole direction that she went in would have been untapped for her. Did it seem to help her? Did she like it?
Well, I gotta tell you, I was really blown away.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was thinking, well, when does that opportunity come up in other circumstances? And she agreed to do it, you know, and I said, I gotta practice this.
Well, maybe that's a good technique. Just grab somebody and say, yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, here we do have a time constraint all the mm-hmm. time, and so the long pause.
Oh, well, so I hear a suggestion here, or a notion that perhaps a longer period of time at some point would be beneficial.
At least maybe interesting to experiment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, tell me a little about drawing out. Is drawing out terribly different from clarifying?
The two times that I seem to be thinking that I'm doing what I would call drawing out are when someone's looking at some process that they do. You know, well, I do this, and then this happens, and then sometimes that's an opportunity to say things like, and what happens after that, or do you remember what happened right before that? Or those kinds of questions about trying to help them maybe see pieces they haven't seen. And the other one that I see myself using sometimes, particularly with people who are familiar with the practice, is asking about aspects of themselves. Well, who is it that says that?
Uh-huh.
Who is it that believes that? Those are two of the things that come to my mind.
So what I hear in that is that you primarily use this technique with someone who seems to be very familiar with what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They may have gone over it and over it and over it. They've had it reflected. Again, they can kind of tell the story. And so now you have an opportunity to just slip that little question in there that might...
There's a question that is sort of a clarifying question that's also a drawing out question, which would be something like, can you say more about that? And sometimes all you get is a clarification, you know, you get the same thing restated, and sometimes someone says more about that.
Yes.
Sometimes when I ask it, I'm asking it as a clarifying question, and it tends to launch something different.
It accomplishes all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so the common theme that I see in this is sincerity. You know, you sincerely want to know in that way, not of understanding for myself so that I can do something with this, but sincerely there and present, and that kind of question just comes out of that sincerity.
That's my experience for sure, that just kind of, it just feels like it's coming through me. It feels natural. And then there's other times when it feels like I'm self-conscious. And I may be with a person in a sense, you know, and I think there's a lot of degrees in between that too. But when I'm in a place of where it's coming naturally, you know, I'm really interested. I'm interested not for me, but I'm just really interested. And I'm feeling some kind of a heart connection, I think, too, with the person.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I feel self-conscious, I'm worried about me. And I'm worried about what, you know, how I'm looking, or what I'm, you know, am I doing the right thing, or that kind of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel like that's a dry place. I mean, it doesn't feel like there's much that comes
mm-hmm.
that comes out of that. And then I end up getting into, well, what should I say?
Does this seem like a really good place for a drawing out question?
Yeah.
I mean, that you're really stuck. So how do you move from that place of the only thing that matters here is how I look back into a, can we give this back to the person that this is really for? How can I get the focus off of myself and onto this other person?
Well, I don't know if this is what you're pointing at, but it feels like the drawing out can be an avenue towards that, because it reawakens my natural curiosity.
Uh-huh.
Now, people are fascinating. It doesn't matter what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
On all kinds of different levels, people mm-hmm. are. Just being alive with another person in some kind of a communication is just a fascinating thing. And
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a really, you know, that's a really big thing to tap into.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm separate from that, I think it's, if I could stay with it, like you were saying a minute ago, and you know, it seems like there's a lot of avenues back into that.
Mm-hmm.
That natural sort of curiosity and connection.
So there you are in the place that we're just talking about. You know, you're identified, you derailed, you've lost it, there's no connection. You know that the other person knows it. There's no hope of hiding out. What do you do? What do you say? Fess up, okay. And what form might that take?
I'm really sorry I lost you. Could we back up?
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else might you do? What else might you try?
I might say, I'm projecting all over the place, so can we... It's essentially the same thing that
mm-hmm.
Anne just said.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find that when I have an idea
of what's really happening and I think they don't know it, it's not a good time to ask a drawing out question.
Not a good time. Let's underline that. Let's underline that. When I think I know the point of this person's life and they don't, no leading questions. Because they're not drawing out questions, right, are they? They're leading questions. Yeah. So again, now what do you do in a case like that? There you are. We can guess fairly identified, if not totally identified. You're trying to save this person, right? Because you can see the solution. It's obvious. It's obvious that they can't see it. What can you do?
I actually used this with a friend of mine on the phone the other day. I said, I'm feeling very impatient. Let's slow down.
Uh-huh.
What was the last thing you said? And just...
You could see yourself headed down that little side road and you just brought yourself right back up on the... Okay, by acknowledging what's going on with you. Right? Because that's a, you know, that's a decent thing to do for somebody because they know. But everything, you know, there I am in complete urgency. And I think the other person isn't aware of it. So can I come back and as a part of the disidentification process, acknowledge what's going on with me? I'm getting really carried away with myself here. Let me take a deep breath and now tell me again what that point was that you made about blah, blah, blah. Or what of this do you see as the really significant point? You know, I realize I've just gotten totally caught up in my own ideas here. Tell me, you know, what are you seeing in this? And the thing about it is, you know, I can be just dead on what somebody's deal is. You know, I mean, I've got them so pegged, but it doesn't mean anything until they say it. You know, I might be completely excited over here, knowing that somebody is on the brink of seeing whatever it is that I know they should see. And I so want to give them the abbreviated version so that they could just take it in immediately and be liberated. And, you know, if you've delivered that kind of information often enough, you just watch it just go right over their head, past them, wherever, it just drops back there somewhere. And then at whatever amount of time later, they articulate in their language what they were getting to. Because how did I have this great insight? I had it by following along with their process. Basically, they were telling me what the answer was. We attempt to avoid translating things into our language. Because most of us are conditioned to seek approval. And an awful lot of people will tell us whatever it is that they think we want to hear. Boy, I mean, in my line of work, the number of times that people say to me, and they preface it just this way, I know you've said this 1,000 times, but... And my response to it always is, from the heart, it always is because it is completely true. It doesn't matter who said it. It doesn't matter. It only matters when you say it. Because that's the only time it's happened. Yeah.
And when we think we're putting things in a really wonderful way, it doesn't work anyway. There have been so many times in my experience, people will come up and they'll say, I'll never forget that you said...
That's right.
It bears no relationship.
That's right.
Anything I think I ever said.
That's right. Because you know you would have never said that.
I would never have said that.
That's right. But it doesn't matter. That's what they heard and they want to give you credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not as much fun when it goes the other way. You know, it really ticked me off when you said, I never said that.
But it just points out how, you know, putting it in my own words in a way that I thought was just wonderful meant nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a wasted exercise.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you enjoyed it.
I sure did.
Right? Yeah. When I say something really incredibly brilliant, I always enjoy it. But if we wait around for somebody else to enjoy it, it can be a dry spell.
Well, I was just remembering one time when we were working in Paris, and got to the end, the first bell had rung, and we'd been mapping on the paper, and the person facilitating me said, what would happen if you gave this person more attention? Now that, she didn't, that's a suggestion, and I really it perked up, and it made sense to me.
Uh-huh.
There's a place where people will actually sort of put out a clue for you to ask that kind of a question, too. Like, I just don't know what I'd do if this happened.
What do you think you would do?
What would you do? Yeah. And it seems to be, it's still in the realm of taking, listening and taking the clues from that person.
Mm-hmm. That which brings up another interesting place to me. There I am. I say, I just don't know. I don't know what I would do. And you say, what would you do? I don't know. Okay. Now, what do you do? There you are as the facilitator. Are you going to do CPR and try to breathe life into that thing or what? You know the standard, the very best facilitator line? Well, are you okay with that? Which is good, right? Because the person might say, well, yeah, okay. All right, we're finished. But the person might say, no, you know, I'm not okay with that. And then they're going to, in another direction. Mm-hmm. So my point with that is, sometimes it's over. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes if we have the patience and the willingness and the time and all of that, we can sit there for whatever length of time is necessary for the person to go in a new direction. But sometimes it's just time for it to be finished. I just feel really sad about that.
Someone was facilitating me in a different context, and I said something like, well, I don't know. And what they asked me was, they said, well, if you did know, what would you do? And it was like, I mean, it was such a great way to ask it, because it's like it distances you enough. It's like, well, I don't know.
That's right.
But if I did, it gives you a great deal of permission.
Yeah. Say if, in fact, you had the problem that I have. Now, my problem, I haven't a clue. But if you had the problem, I would know a lot of things that you could do about it. Yeah, that's good. Okay. What were the other points that we wanted to make for these folks?
How to support a facilitator.
How can we support the facilitator? Because somebody else may be facilitating this evening, but then the next time I may be facilitating. So how do I want people to be with me when I'm facilitating? What are they?
No crosstalk.
No crosstalk. And that means no talking to somebody across the room who just said something really interesting, and no turning around and talking to your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean you're always talking to me?
I'm always talking to the facilitator. And I'm also not trying to get around that guideline by subtly using you as a conduit to actually give advice to someone else.
Uh-huh.
That I'm always looking at my response. I'm always looking inward to what's going on for me in reaction to whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm. Seeing your own postures, seeing your own projections, watching the part of you who gets triggered, trying to see if you can disidentify, use mm-hmm. it as an opportunity to let it go and come back to center.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that in some group was pointed out to me as a way to be a participant in a group would be to use the time to practice in your head facilitating while the facilitator's facilitating someone, so that you stay engaged rather than saying, well, this isn't happening with me right now, so I can just
go to sleep. Yeah, wait till something interesting comes along.
Right.
Oh, it's so helpful. So there's the person talking, and you think, inside, be the facilitator. Okay, because that person's going to stop talking. What's my response going to be? And then watch what the other facilitator does. So
both,
helpful.
It's both good practice, and it supports the facilitator,
yes,
because it means everyone is there with them.
Yes, because it's a misery, isn't it? To be the facilitator, and you know everybody in the room is asleep except you and the person that you're talking to currently.
Right.
And you're not sure about you. All right. How else can we support the facilitator? How about participation? It's a huge support for the facilitator, isn't it? Facilitator is saying, so! And nobody is playing.
I think that sort of falls for me under the category of taking responsibility. I come somewhere and I'm in a group discussion. I've come there to do that. And, you know, maybe there's some nights where I'm not going to say anything. And that's fine. But that I'm an active participant in the group, and just to recognize that, you know, what are we talking about?
Which means I'm showing up doing the very best I can.
Mm-hmm.
And the first part of that is I'm showing up,
mm-hmm,
right? Which is the one that I wish everybody in the world could get. Because almost all of us believe inside, especially when we're trying to get out of something, oh, well, I don't really matter anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything interesting to contribute. You know, they're not going to notice if I'm not there. And then one night everybody concludes that. And then that's really not supportive of the facilitator who's there alone. So I show up ready to be here to the best of my ability, which can mean being totally identified, but at least perhaps having a willingness to talk about it. Okay. What other points now did we want to make?
I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about facilitating a whole group. I'm thinking specifically about there may be one person who continually dominates the group, and they talk for, you know, you have a half hour discussion, and they talk for 25 minutes of it 3 weeks in a row. How to deal with that? How to facilitate a whole group, taking into account what the best thing is for everyone, not just the particular individual that you may be facilitating.
Mm-hmm. Hey, anybody, and that reminds me of the energy vampire. So let's not forget that happy character. So what about that, facilitators? What are you going to do? Any ideas?
You can just ask if other people have things they want to say, and say you want to make sure everybody has a chance.
Just kind of straightforward. Okay? I know in groups I have said on occasion, there are people who feel very comfortable talking in groups, and there are people who tend not to feel comfortable talking in groups. So if you're one who feels very comfortable, maybe you can give other people a chance to who are not quite as comfortable to talk. And maybe if you're one who doesn't feel comfortable, you'll use this group as an opportunity to risk a little bit and put yourself out there a little more. So sometimes things can be addressed to the whole group, so nobody needs to take it personally unless they just want to. Any other ideas about that?
I know a place that I have probably the most difficult time is addressing something straightforwardly without bringing a whole lot of identification with it. Because usually what happens for me is I sense that something needs to be addressed, and then my conditioned pattern is, in order to act on that, I've got to get myself in a wad about it to give me enough energy to get over my fear of addressing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm, you know, I've just put a big hunk of conditioning right there in the middle of the room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't
so
know.
It's an interesting line for facilitators, isn't it? Practicing saying something when it's appropriate rather than letting it build until there's a big charge on it. If you've let it build until there's a big charge on it, can you let it be until you've worked through the charge?
Mm-hmm.
Either way of coming at it is going to be more skillful
mm-hmm.
than just taking somebody out. because
yeah.
as the facilitator you didn't address it soon enough.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me, one thing that's helpful is to recognize that part of the role of facilitator is to help to maintain the privileged environment for the whole group. And it's like, oh, okay, that's my job.
Yes.
That's my role here.
Yes.
You know, it is okay to address this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this person comes in and starts lecturing everyone. Well, maybe that should be addressed. It mm-hmm. doesn't seem to be helpful to the whole group.
Yeah. This is a little kind of a rule of thumb. People can always be met where they are. The person who comes into a room full of people doing something, and as in your example, starts giving lectures, can be met at that level. If you're waiting for that person to develop the kind of sensitivity that you have to them, you could wait a really long time.
Does that mean you start lecturing them?
No, it means that you don't have to worry quite so much about being offensive. Because this is not a person who is putting a lot of energy into, now what is this room doing? And but you are probably responding to them as if they were, because that's the place that you're projecting from. Okay, so there you are, you're being the facilitator, and you're trying to create a safe, privileged environment for everyone in which to feel comfortable, and you have somebody who's oblivious to all of that. You can probably be fairly direct with this person, probably much more direct than you would ever suspect.
A long time ago, going on a retreat with you, where there was one particular person who dominated most of the evening discussions, and I remember leaving the retreat feeling like one of the most beneficial things for me during those discussions was getting the opportunity to see me get riled up about the fact that someone was talking a lot, while seeing that the person who was quote-unquote in charge didn't have to do anything about it, that it wasn't a problem.
Uh-huh.
Because what you did was constantly bring what was being said into a situation where everyone could relate to it, and therefore no one ever felt, it never felt like this person was in therapy and that everyone else was just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was really something valuable about letting that be, too.
Uh-huh.
About not necessarily feeling like, okay, I've got to do something about this because it's a problem, this person talks too much, and because that's what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was thinking, gosh, this person talks too much.
Yeah. So it's balance, isn't it? So sometimes it's okay to let that go on, and then maybe if you have a meditation group, and it's like week 15, and we've only heard from this one person, then you might feel like, hey, we've got to step in here and address this. Yeah. So the one that I made reference to a little bit ago is the energy vampire. Now, here's how the energy vampire works. Two ways. One is that you're facilitating somebody, and they get to a point of great, you know, you can tell that they've had one of those moments. Clarity of completion, of awareness, whatever it is. And they don't even get their mouth closed from what they have just said. And this person jumps in and takes all of the attention of the group away from the person. So here we are as a group. You know, Nadine has been working on this thing, and we can watch her get to a point of, what, however you would describe that moment of,
oh,
right. And before the sigh fades away, the person has stepped in and said, well, that reminds me of the time that blah, 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 blah. And you can just watch all of the energy of the group that has been gathered just go right into that person.
Wouldn't that be the facilitator's job then not to call on that person?
Well, this is the tricky part. That person often doesn't wait to be called on. Which is why it's so handy and helpful to do the hands together, raised up, you know, and we wait until the facilitator acknowledges us, because that is one of the functions of the facilitator, is to make sure that doesn't happen to somebody. And sometimes you can be in a group, and again, it'll happen week after week after week after week, where the group is doing something together, and all of us are kind of moving in a direction. It doesn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't have to have a warm, fuzzy quality. It's just that we're sort of all working together. And then, if the group is over at 8:30, at 8:29, this person will launch on some kind of something. Now, everybody else has noticed that we're winding down. Okay, we're all going to leave with our feeling of having shared this Sangha moment together. And this person starts in, and all you can just watch all of that energy just evaporate and go right into this one individual. And it will often take the form of something that is not going to be addressed tonight. You know, it's not just the quick little, I saw something about that today, in fact, when da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And everybody still gets to hang on to, you know, it's going to be, well, yeah, and you know, my mother-in-law did it again, and it will often take the form of an ongoing saga, okay? So this is another one that you've got to, you as the facilitator, I can promise you, if you develop that protocol of the facilitator acknowledging somebody before she or he speaks, you can avoid that kind of thing, because when you feel that the room has that quality to it, if it's 25 after, you might be smart to end the group rather than we have 5 more minutes and you know that we're going to go somewhere that we are not going to get out of in the next 5 minutes. People understand what I'm talking about? Okay. Well, gosh. This has been great.